CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, it is live. I say, it is happening. It is real. It is on your menu for this morning. It is the Gareth Cliff Show on CliffCentral.com. Yo. Let's get cracking. We got lots to do today. We got lots of people to talk to, lots of places to go, lots of things to get stuck into. I'm joined by the beautiful Phumelele Mashego, extremely well-groomed, except for his beard, Siyasangweni, and the exercise freak that is Mbulelo Tinta. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And of course you, and you join us from your house, just like Sia and Pumi are this morning. So it's the new normal. That's what this is. How's it? How's everything going?
Don't be rude about Sia's beard. It too is the new normal.
You like that, Pumi? You like it? What do you think? Come on.
I do. It's got him like looking a little bit distinguished. It also makes him look a little older than 12.
Oh. You know, I will catch glimpses of myself and it still doesn't look normal on me.
But I felt a spectrum.
I felt very manly, I'll have to admit, the other day when I had to brush it down. I thought,
See, are people calling you Numzan rather than Mfan?
I'm in no rush for someone to call me Numzan, so that would actually make me want to trim it off before everything else.
Do you know how? Do you have a little qual?
A beard trimming thing.
Like trimmer.
Not here. So that's a problem in and of itself. But my mother, who's very passive aggressive, just gave me.
What did she say?
This reference, but Miranda Priestley is the main character in The Devil Wears Prada. My mom just said, "So, this beard of yours," and I'm like, "Yeah," and she just scanned me. I could tell that she was just scanning me deliberately from the top of my my face down to my beard, up again to retain eye contact. She said, "Okay, nothing." I'm like, "No, but you've said everything."
That's vicious criticism from your mother.
That is,
yeah,
especially because she just loves you.
You would think
that got deep.
So, guys, first of all, I mean, like, this is very upsetting. So we didn't talk about it yesterday, but little Richard died over the weekend. I'm upset about that because who doesn't know, you know, the wah babaloo baba wah bam boom? Who doesn't know that stuff? And this was a real character in music. And I see yesterday Jerry Stiller died, Ben Stiller's dad, who was George Costanza's father in Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those people I'm going to miss. Those are great people, those two.
And still Kirk Douglas pisses.
So, and yet, through rain and snow and gloom of night and coronavirus and God alone knows what, Kirk fucking Douglas keeps going.
The little Richard
is
thing.
Is Kirk Douglas, I'm sure he...
No, Kirk Douglas is dead.
No, he's dead. Yeah, I was going to say.
Remember, we lost him a few weeks ago.
I just suddenly had a moment.
Yeah.
Because I remember winning some points for him. Yeah, sorry. No, Kirk Douglas died in February.
But listen, can we have a moment?
Betty White's still going. She's just going to die.
Prince Philip's still going as well.
Prince Philip's still going, yeah. And Cher is still alive.
But Cher's younger than those people.
Is she? Is she really? Because I know there's that joke about how when God created the universe and Adam and Eve were standing in the Garden of Eden, they said, "Lord, what was there at the beginning?" And he said, "In the beginning, there was the Word." And they said, "Oh, Lord, tell us more." And he said, "And there was this weird woman called Cher." But I left her alone.
Oh, Jess.
She was the summer there.
But I'm kind of sad because I think a lot of people didn't even know that Jerry Stiller was Ben Stiller's dad. And they would have known him from his role. Didn't he also have a role in some other TV?
No, Zoolander. So he was in Zoolander, of course, as Zoolander's, like, advisor.
Oh, was he?
Yes, of course, with Ben Stiller. And then he was, what's the fat guy who's the delivery?
The King of Queens.
King of Queens.
That's right. Yeah. That's also where I knew him from. But most famously from Seinfeld as George Costanza's dad. And he would say to George, George, don't do this! He'd always shout. He'd shout everything in the show. I mean, and Little Richard, man, that guy was an entertainer second to none.
You know, so over the weekend, obviously people were tweeting their Little Richard stories.
Yeah, right.
And oh my word, Ava DuVernay is the one that blew me away. What? So first of all, I saw Tevin Campbell tweeting about meeting Little Richard when he was like 13 or 14 years old at a place called Aunt Lizzie's Back Porch or something, like some kind of like...
What? Stereotypical.
What is a 13-year-old Tevin Campbell doing at Aunt Lizzie's Back Porch? While I was still trying to figure that out, Ava DuVernay tweeted how when she was in college, she used to waitress at Aunt Lizzie's Back Porch.
I can imagine. Was that in Atlanta?
No. So I think it was in L.A.
Okay, because he was famous about, you know, the fact he was very proud of the fact that he was from Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't be surprised if it was somewhere in the South. Aunt Liz's Back Porch.
But she then told the story of how when she was a waitress there, he used to come in every Sunday morning to have like a scrambled egg breakfast of some sort, which costs like $25. Yeah. And then he would tip her $100 in 1993, every weekend, without fail. He tipped her $100.
Wow. That is, first of all, that tells you more about... I love those stories because they tell you all about the character of the person rather than the stuff you can find on Wikipedia. And
sure.
And this just also tells you... I mean, this guy was... First of all, the talent was coming out of every pore. He was, as I said earlier, the consummate entertainer. I don't think people even cared what he was singing. He made up words, but he would dance in front of that piano, man, and could he put on a show? Like when you were watching Little Richard, there's nothing else in the world going on, and that's to me the mark of a true entertainer, someone who can hold.
Isn't it just?
He can hold your attention through. I mean, if there was a hurricane going on behind the stage, people would still be focused on Little Richard, and he was pretty jealous about how much attention you were giving him during the show. He wanted both your eyes firmly fixed on him the whole time, and he did whatever he needed to do to keep you there. Man, that was those kinds of entertainers. I don't know if we've got if any of them are going to be there in the next 100 years, because it's almost like a generation of them. Remember, he always claimed. He said, "I taught the white people how to rock and roll." He said,
"You did."
Yeah, he said. He said, "I taught them white people how to rock and roll because before I came along, they thought rock and roll was a white thing. I told them the black people started rock and roll, and I'm going to tell them how I'm going to do it better than the white people." And he was just like a megastar. I don't think
a real rock star.
I don't think there's anyone on earth who didn't know his music, right?
His only crime is probably being born at the same time as the other super funk guy who probably took all the shine, right? James Brown.
If it wasn't
for James Brown,
well, yeah,
he gets more shine. But James Brown was just James Brown.
But you've also got to...
But still great.
You've got to give credit because Little Richard stood on the shoulders of giants, just like James Brown and Elvis Presley did. There were a whole lot of much less well-known artists, a lot of these minstrel groups, as they called them, you know, these quartets, barbershop quartets and so on. There were those guys in the South who were doing, you know, these groups are like four black guys who would go around and sing on street corners, and they'd sing at Mardi Gras parades and that kind of thing. And those are the guys who really invented a whole genre of music. And they didn't do it. They weren't conscious of the fact that they were developing one of the most famous genres in musical history. But these are the guys, and some women, it has to be said, who developed, they were like the laboratory of rock and roll in the early 1940s, 50s, and late into the 60s. Because those are the guys who, the bigger names, like Little Richard and James Brown and Elvis and, you know, those guys, and Sam, I'm just going blank at the moment, but there were a lot of these people who learned from those smaller groups and used to borrow from their songs. And so he really is, he was the apex of a whole development that was going on in that region of America at that time. And we are grateful, Little Richard. So rest in peace. You goddamn genius.
What a time, man. What a life.
What a time. Listen here, the man gave us good golly, Miss Molly.
And she sure lacked the bone. Good golly, Miss Molly. She sure lacked the bone. Woo! You know what I mean? What a guy. Fuck. I listened. And what an energy. I mean, like, just an... Every song, he must have been exhausted by the time he finished each song. I don't know how he handled it. He must have been on a lot of cocaine.
Look, and we can't not look at his fabulousness, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about it as I saw all of the tributes over the weekend, that I think we've lost our sense of occasion and our sense of, you know, just dressing up and just blowing everything out of the water. Maybe it's just the dramatic person in me, but you know, he would, when he dressed up, he dressed up. When he did his hair, he did his hair. And when he stated his claim, he did so as well. I was really bowled over by his one particular line in an old interview where he was talking about the fact once again that he wants to be credited for what he did for true rock and roll. And he said, yeah, because I'm good looking. I'm good looking.
Oh, there was no confidence problem.
And then he says, no. But let me tell you something. I'm not conceited. I'm not conceited at all.
Yeah.
I'm just convinced.
Wow, what a guy.
Do you know the kind of confidence it takes to wear hair like that?
Oh, man.
And face powder like that. Eyeliner like that.
That is some signature look he had.
But you know,
can I just quickly give credit to some of these people who we were talking about, because here it says, and I was just looking up something that I read not so long ago, Penniman, which is his real surname, Richard Wayne Penniman, Little Richard, was cited as one of the first crossover black artists reaching audiences of all races. His music and concerts broke the color line, drawing blacks and whites together despite attempts to sustain segregation. His contemporaries, including Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly, Bill Haley, Jerry Lee Lewis, the Everly Brothers, Gene Vincent, and Eddie Cochran, all recorded covers of his work. Taken by his music and style, and personally covering four of Penniman's songs in his own two breakthrough albums, Presley told Penniman in 1969 that his music was an inspiration to him, and that he was, and this is in the words of Elvis, who people say is the greatest, he called Little Richard the greatest. So how's that?
That is cool.
Mm-hmm. That's quite cool. So, I mean, you know, we're bound to, because he was an older guy by this stage. He was born in, what, like 1932? So, you know, his time was going to come eventually. And we're always sad, but I'm not going to say any of that gone too soon bullshit, because that just...
It was not too soon.
No, he had a good time.
He lived his life, right? He had a full innings.
And how lucky are we?
Is that the right phrase?
You know, Bulelo? Somebody
good innings.
Somebody posted, and Bulelo, I need you to comment on something too, because you've said this before, and I kind of only realized it when it came into music, because I'm not a sports fan. Mm-hmm. But someone said on the internet like a couple of days ago, and it was so nice because it, first of all, wasn't related to coronavirus. And I was like, thank you for saying something that is just a little bigger in context and perspective. Some guy said, you know, we're so lucky that out of the, I don't know what it is, it must be close to 8 or 9 billion people who've ever lived on Earth, because, you know, biggest population that's ever, of humans that's ever lived is right now. And maybe there were another 2 or 3 billion going back in history, if you counted every soul that has passed on. But out of all of those people, we are living in a time where we get to see, you know, Ronaldo and Messi and those guys playing soccer, who are the best footballers ever. I mean, Pele and all the rest of them, God bless you, but we're seeing the best footballers ever. And I'm so pleased that I got to live in a time, and I got to appreciate, while he was alive, people like Little Richard.
And I'd say to amplify that is, it'll never be this exciting again, because it's only at the beginning. in 100 years, perhaps a Ronaldo will come along and Elvis Presley will come along. It won't be amazing anymore. For us, it's still amazing. We're at the dawn of being able to observe these things. So it's the greatest time ever to be alive. There's never been a time like now.
I couldn't agree more. And even though we're dealing with this crap that we're dealing with at the moment, it's still the best time because we can talk about these great people and they're living among us. And some of them are passing on during our lifetimes, but we get to see it while it's hot, you know? It's just great. I was listening to some music over the weekend. And, you know, I often joke that I don't need a lot of people in my life, but maybe I get that inspiration from music and from literary works and stuff that people have left behind. So I feel like those souls and those spirits are around me some of the time. And I spent a good 4 or 5 hours over the weekend while I was, you know, messing around, replying to emails, doing some creative stuff. I was listening to music and it's so interesting. Like, I didn't know he was going to die. Nobody did. But a couple of the Little Richard songs came through on my playlist. And looking back now, I got up and I was moving around and you just can't help yourself. That shows you that this stuff is timeless and he will be a part of the human story. No matter how long humanity lives on this planet, no matter what diseases try to wipe us out, there will be a little corner of it that will always be someone like Little Richards. And I think that's just magic.
That's awesome. Yeah.
God damn. I'm going to miss you, motherfucker.
Good golly, Gareth. That was touching.
Why, Pumi, does the death of someone like Little Richard make me more upset than when I hear about, like, you know, some natural disaster or something? And there are obviously souls that are wiped out during those things. And even this coronavirus, which is taking people out, you know, I'm unable to connect at the level that I am with Little Richard. And I don't know the guy. You know what I mean? I don't know him. I don't know him. I don't know the COVID people who've died. But I feel so much more for Little Richard.
But you do. I think that's the thing about art, is that you do get to know. Because in each artwork, whether it's a writing, a piece of writing, or whether it's a painting, you get to know a little bit of that particular individual. You get to know something about their soul, because that's what they transfer into the world. And because it's so close to you, because it's in your radio, it's on your iPod, it's on your phone, it's you are part of that person and they are part of your story. And I think, like, music is one of those things for me that's like smells. Is it just, it transports you, it's like magic. It transports you back to a place and time that when you first heard the song, or a most memorable thing around that song, or how you feel each time you hear that piece of music, he's part of your life much more than like thousands of people that are wiped out by a natural disaster. That those are just, you know, people and numbers over there far away. But this is a person who's part of your life story too.
Yeah. No, you're spot on.
So that's why you feel like that. At least that's how I feel.
You are right. You are right. I love it. So, Pums, you have been dealing with nasty people. do you want to explain this? You've been spring cleaning during lockdown, and maybe other people have too. But what is this nastiness that you're concerned with,
Gareth? So it was on this show some months ago that I learned that there are people who actually don't shower the bottom part of their legs. And I was horrified.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
It still haunts me. The idea that there are people who don't like soap the bottom part of their legs. Yes, Mbulelo, I see that face. It's a true thing. But yesterday, when I saw this thread on Twitter, I think I reached a new level of, I cannot believe we live in a time where humans are like this. This guy posted a picture of puff pastry that his mom finally got to the bottom of the freezer, and she pulled out this puff pastry because she was going to make some kind of tart or pie or whatever. Mm. But the fucking thing was from 25 years ago. You know, there's that little thing that says best before?
Yeah.
It says best before. 99, like, come on, 1990.
Ridiculous. What? That is ridiculous.
So I thought he was like a once off right? I thought your mom's crazy. And she made a pie out of it because his whole thread is about his mom making this pie out of this thing.
The 25-year-old pie.
This is actually disgusting and horrendous. He must be the only person in the world. And then I read the comments in the comment section. This guy's tweet thread had something like 20,000 retweets and likes and all of that. It was like a runaway success.
Yeah.
But people in the thread, guy, were out rivaling him. There is a person on that thread who posted a thing about how when his mom finally moved to New York and they eventually like got rid of the fridge itself. Uh-oh. They found stuff in the fridge from like the 60s.
No.
It's impossible.
No, hang
Why
on.
Are people keeping shit like this?
I don't know about you, but I'm pretty uptight about these things. I do have stuff that sits in cupboards, not food stuff, but I've got things that I find in cupboards, like, you know, old bits of paper that I've had for 20 years or whatever. And I've got something scribbled on there. But food, the kitchen, I clear that pantry out every 3 to 4 months. And
really?
I'm horrified if I find, like a packet of frozen stuff or whatever in the freezer that's older than 3 months. Because if it's older than that, it means you have not used it. It means you have not. Like, I'm a Spartan when it comes to food shopping. I only buy exactly what I need. I don't buy extra stuff and keep it there.
There were people on this thread saying, yeah, but the thing says best before. It doesn't say use by. And I was just like,
my people.
See ya? No.
Oh, my goodness.
Unacceptable.
And so I wondered if people do this. Do people like, are there people who have like tinned stuff in their pantry from like 2 years ago? And they, how long do you wait? How long do you wait before you throw something out? Even if you haven't opened it or haven't used it, like just throw it out. Like 25 years, guys.
Yeah. I'm not going to eat a puff. I'm not going to eat some puff pastry that someone pulls out from 1995. I'm not that hungry, man.
Maybe, please stop looking at me.
Maybe one of these days when none of us have money and the coronavirus has wiped us out and we don't have jobs and we have to eat 25-year-old puff pastry, then fine. But I'm not in any hurry.
Ew.
Okay, I'm slowly raising my hand. Just slowly.
What, yeah?
I will even admit that 25 years is very excessive. But
that's longer than you've been alive. Think about that.
But I'm sure there are some people in a club, which I am part of, who have like tinned goods in their pantry that they, you know, bought once for a recipe they thought they were going to try. And you know what? A year and a half later, they still haven't tried it. And it's just sitting there. Yeah, when I finally get around to cleaning things, maybe that's when I'll throw it out.
Hey, listen, Sia. First and foremost, can you just turn the mic gain on that little bumblebee microphone of yours down a little bit? You're very loud this morning. It's giving people headaches.
I'm trying to prove my point.
That sounds like
it. He's not conceited. He's convinced.
Your levels are all over the place on the show this morning. So
I'm convinced.
Just there we go. Just wind it in a little bit. You're getting very excitable here, like little Richard.
But speaking of this, there was a great Twitter post a couple of weeks ago by Luisa Gola, the hilarious comedian.
I love that guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I miss him. And Sia, can't we please talk to him now during lockdown?
All right.
Please. He makes me smile from ear to ear. He's like, he's like our, and I've said this before, he's almost like a little bit of our own kind of Dave Chappelle in some ways. Loy.
Yeah.
So I love the guy. What did he say?
He says, so he says it in Xhosa, which, you know, if you're Xhosa, you understand. Everything goes 20 or 30 things.
So Pumi and Sia and I won't. Okay, but go ahead, Mbulelo.
Yeah.
But just understand that today, Mbulelo identifies as Xhosa.
Yeah. Yesterday it was Pedi. Today's Xhosa.
No. We gave you Mandela. We gave you Mbeki. We gave you Siya Kolisi. What the hell, Momus?
And now you've burdened us with Mbulelo Tinta. So thank you, Xhosa Nation. You've ruined us.
Just and done all that good work.
The Lord giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other.
The Lord giveth and he taketh away. So Loiso says, you know, all you people who are going to Woolworths to buy lockdown food, you're ridiculous. Woolworths food expires tomorrow. Go to Boxer. And I think you can imagine the rest from there. Absolutely.
Oh, that's... yep. Woolworths food.
100%.
Does expire tomorrow. But this guy's 25 years. And there were people on here, like so many people, just like tweeting and posting pictures of stuff, like a can. This can's been in my cupboard for, first of all, who has a freezer that lasts that long?
Do you know?
Good point.
Doesn't a can start to rust at a certain point as well? Because
yes,
they are not made of tin. They're actually made of stainless steel with a little bit of tin. And that means that the stainless steel can rust. So if you've got a liquid like baked beans or soup or whatever in a can and you leave it for more than 10 years, guaranteed there's a whole bunch of iron oxide in there. Guaranteed.
And like there's so many things to be said about this, guys.
Such disbelief.
1,600 people responded to this guy's tweet. Man. And about 80% of them are like outrivaling his story.
Oh.
I'm like, do you not even clean this thing? Has this thing not, or do you clean and put back the old stuff? Like, what the hell's going on here?
Because another part is this, right? Is how long do you have to be living in that house that it's 25 years and you haven't moved out and that thing's still in there? Like, did you take your mom's fridge? I understand in this case it's his mom's fridge, but yeah, means, do you know what I mean?
Means those people are staying in the same house for like 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, like this person with a tin of like the worst thing I've ever seen. It's called Deluxe Ox Tongues. Says this like catering size tin of ox tongue is in my mother's fridge and it's been there since 1971.
Oh my god.
Houses and fridges have changed around it. And it watches and waits. Like what?
I can smell that from here.
Oh my god, that's disgusting.
Yeah, sure. That's revolting.
All right, we got to get to the news. I'm sorry to break up this party, but we've got some actual headlines to get to this morning. All right, so let's look to EWN to start off our headlines this morning. The National Teachers Union, that's NATU. Have you heard of NATU?
No.
Well, they believe Education Minister Angie Motshekga was very ambitious when announcing the school management teams should report for duty from Monday. NATU said that the majority of provincial education departments had not yet finalized precautionary measures to ensure that pupils in education facilities were safe before teachers could resume their duties. Now,
is NATU like SATU with a like rebrand or something?
Angas. I've never heard of them either, so... But here's the thing, whoever these NATU, National Teachers Union people are, there is science now. We are learning more about this disease every day. And I know Mbulelo is a big fan of the experts, so let's bring them in on this. The data shows that there has been not a single transmission, even in China in the very beginning, not a single case that we can identify where children have passed this disease on to adults. In other words, kids have caught COVID-19 and they have not passed it on to adults. It seems that the infection rate for children is either negligible or zero in terms of them passing it on to adult humans. So this is something that we need to factor into our calculations here. And if it turns out that kids often are tested positive but show no symptoms, then perhaps the best shot we've got at dealing with this disease is to start letting the children get it And if one or two of them get sick, obviously we need to hospitalize them and be ready to treat them. But at this point, it looks very unlikely that this thing affects children at all. Or if it does, the symptoms are extremely mild. So I don't know whether or not that's something that the teachers' union have considered, whether they're even paying attention to the science, but it is something that Angie Mocheha needs to look at, because parents cannot go back to work if kids aren't back at school. I mean, yeah. you know this, Pumi. You know, and kids are so resilient. Their immune systems are so much better than adults, and they're able to deal with, I mean, a school. All the times you've been sick in the last 6 years, Pumi, have been because Ganejos brought something home from school, right?
Probably. Kids are disgusting.
Right. But he gets over it like that, like most kids do. And the parents get sick, and the older people in the house get sick. So obviously, if there are older people in the household, which is the case for many South Africans who do go to school, then we need to be a little more careful. But we can't be fearful for children if it turns out that this disease doesn't have any real repercussions for kids, right?
So, you know, you say like the little kids, I've been obviously watching as other economies are opening up, and they are taking the approach of kind of phased opening up. And in Finland, they have decided to send their smaller kids to school first, because the smaller kids need more supervision, right? So if you send the smaller kids back to school, you free up the parents to be a little bit more productive more often.
Sure.
And then that's how they're phasing kids back into the system. But they do also leave their babies out in the freezing snow.
They do, I can confirm that.
That's true. The Finnish, they those kids, they don't feel cold.
They do not.
So anyway, that's the first headline from this morning that you need to know. Another story which may be interesting to you, the South African state utility Eskom plans to correct design defects throughout its Mammoth, Medupi and Kusile coal-fired power stations, said on Monday after completing modifications in one of the plant's units. So there's stuff going on there. This, what's his name, Dereiter, who's taken over there, seems to be kicking some backside. Medupi and Kusile, who will be among the largest coal power stations in the world when they're completed, have been beset by delays and faults that have hobbled their electricity output. They're a major reason why Eskom is choking under around $450 billion, that's $24.5 billion in debt, and has implemented nationwide power cuts that helped to push the economy into recession long before the COVID-19 crisis. Eskom said in a statement the modifications had gone smoothly, with the unit reaching full generation capacity of around 800 megawatts after returning to service. So,
you know what I love in leadership?
What?
When I only ever hear about the issues, but not the leader's name. We don't even know De Reuter's name. Like, you were struggling to bring up his name. It means the guy's busy at work. Because, you know, you remember with the previous guys, you were always hearing their agenda, their name.
Well, let's see. Because even if he's fantastic, and I have, so far the record is okay, but we'll see. You know, Eskom is a horrible thing to run. And I don't have faith in any human being, unless they have superhuman powers, being able to fix Eskom. So far he seems to be doing an okay job, and we can hold back on criticism. But believe me, as soon as the politicians start interfering, which they will.
Yeah.
And we all know this because all of us have dealt with parastatals in some way, shape, or form. Maybe Pumi more than the rest of us. As soon as the politicians start getting involved, the best CEO in the world is useless.
Touché.
Let the record show that I said nothing.
Oh.
All right.
Which says everything.
So maybe just
nothing.
Maybe just maybe it'll take Eskom a little while, but they'll get that monster working at some point. It once did. And then Sir Richard Branson is selling a stake in Virgin Galactic to raise $500 million to prop up his other businesses, including Virgin Atlantic. Now, you know we're going through a world economic crisis when Richard Branson has to sell part of one business to fund another. And you know that Virgin Atlantic is in major, major trouble at the moment. I mean, apparently he's offered his Caribbean island as security for the Virgin bailout. Virgin Australia has slumped into administration, just like we call business rescue here. And by the way, this morning I see another headline that Group 5 is going to delist from the JSE and they will be dissolving as well. So there's another massive construction company in South Africa that we will no longer see branded outside construction sites. You know, Group 5.
Hold on. Group 5's been on the rocks. I have it on good authority.
No, that is true. That is absolutely true. So Group 5 has had a very tough time over the... In fact, since 2010, when they had that case against... who was it? Was it Marion Roberts?
So my cousin kind of was part of the team that had to slap them on the wrist after they were caught for financial irregularities.
It was collusion. It was collusion.
I didn't say that. It was
a collusion case, and it was WBHO and Marion Roberts, and it was around the World Cup. And after that, they did battle to get work.
Stadiums.
So
I didn't make those accusations. I just said there were financial irregularities that were investigated.
That's already in the public realm, and it's true, Mbulelo, so don't worry. You don't have to cover your tracks. Twitter has launched labels and warnings on misleading COVID-19 information. You know, everybody's so concerned with not spreading fake news, but we're actually missing the science on all of this, because the fake news was that COVID was going to kill billions of people. That was the fake news. And I want to know if the people who passed that around, including the WHO, this guy Neil Ferguson in the UK who worked for Imperial College, I want to know if those people are going to be prosecuted for starting the fake news in the first place. And while we're on the WHO, they also lied on behalf of China in the beginning. I'd like to know if that fake news is going to be prosecuted. But we're more worried about ordinary people passing on bad information. I mean, if Sandra down the road tells me that coronavirus can be, you know, transmitted by, you know, me breathing in air that she was in 20 minutes ago, I'm not going to take that seriously because it's Sandra from down the road. But if it's the WHO or the chief data scientist at Imperial College and it turns out they were talking shit, then I think that those people should be held accountable, not ordinary old Sandra, because Sandra's responsibility for the world is much less than the responsibility of WHO and Neil Ferguson at Imperial College. So I'm not that bothered about this, but it seems everyone else in the world is massively concerned about fake news and conspiracy theories.
The crime is not WHO, Twitter, whatever, scientific literacy in society. That's not on any of those organizations. That's on us people.
Yes, but Mbulelo, those people are the ones that we look to tell us the truth. And if it turns out that they got it completely wrong, there should be a price to pay. No?
No, because I argue we should be more scientifically literate en masse.
Mbulelo,
what kind of fantasy realm do you live in? Are you playing video games in your sleep?
But this is asking more of our society to be mathematically literate.
Mbulelo, this disease is a new disease. We've only just started to crack the code on this disease now, 3, 4, 5 months in. Uh-huh. So when would you have liked every dumb idiot in this country who's more concerned about filling their stomach and walking upright, when would you have liked them to have read scientific papers in Nature or other journals?
Mbulelo, all I'm going to say to you, my friend, is you have way too much faith in humanity. People are not reading the labels on their food. They're keeping puff pastry for 25 years.
Thank you.
And you want them to be what? Scientifically literate? I'm a nazobanga.
So I think we've got an admission from Mbulelo that he's just wrong on this one. So anyway, Twitter have got new labels and warning messages on some tweets with disputed or misleading information. The company said on Monday, as part of a new approach to misinformation, which will eventually extend to other topics. So now they're going to make sure that we don't read fake news.
Who's going to be labeling all of these things? These kinds of pronouncements, they're just for show. They're to keep the rest of us kind of hoodwinked.
Absolutely.
But Jack Dorsey's a moralist now.
Yeah, and also,
who's the one deciding this tweet? Fake news. This tweet, outrageous. Yeah. Who's the person deciding that shit? Some 20-year-old, like, community manager.
Some Silicon Valley manager sitting at their desk on their iPad. I'm going to take them seriously. Listen,
maybe it's actually Ethel, who's the one who owns that ox tongue that hasn't been out of the fridge in 25 years. And because Ethel can't learn any new skills to be promoted elsewhere in the company, at least you can click one button to market.
Yeah, well, you know what? Here's the problem. Like Twitter, thank you so much for trying to save us from fake news. But the reality is that most of the bullshit that all of us know in the world today is from Twitter. So actually, if you want to stop fake news, Twitter, why don't you just shut down Twitter?
Ooh,
how about that? So Jack Dorsey, if you're listening now, thank you so much for your care and consideration and your great efforts at combating fake news. But if you really want to make a difference to the world, make the world a better place, cancel Twitter. Delete the whole fucking thing. Do us all a favor. How about that?
Gareth, how will I broadcast my outrage without Twitter?
Well, precisely. You want to stop fake news and you want to stop outrageous comments from people and people letting their feelings loose and seeking attention in a place that has become mired in every controversy of the last. And plus, you'll shut Donald Trump down. I mean, wouldn't that be worth it?
Gareth, that bathwater had a baby in it, by the way.
I'm happy to throw it out.
You just threw out.
Bulela, I'm happy to throw it out, really. That thing is toxic and poisonous and has made humanity worse, not better. No way. There is no way you can prove to me that there aren't other applications that can take the best parts of Twitter and make them work for us, and that we can't just throw the crap out all at one fell swoop. Anyway, let's leave it alone.
Are we on headline number 3 right now?
Believe it or not.
Okay, can we have number 4?
Okay, here's number 4. Twitter has lost... I'm kidding.
Wow. Another Twitter one.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Number 5.
No, I'm kidding. Elon Musk.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
The same. It's as bad as Twitter.
On Monday said production was resuming at the automaker's sole U.S. vehicle factory in California, defying an order to stay closed, saying if anyone had to be arrested, it should be him. Good for him. We need to
see. I thought he was moving his factory. Part of his outrage was he was so outraged that they can't open the factory, so he's moving his factory to somewhere else, another state, packing up everything.
Apparently, the move comes as states and cities around the U.S. experiment with ways to safely reopen their economies after the coronavirus outbreak shuttered businesses and forced tens of millions of Americans out of work. Musk over the weekend threatened to leave California, as Pumi said, for Texas or Nevada over his factory's closure. His move has highlighted the competition for jobs and ignited a rush to woo the billionaire executive by states that have reopened their economies more quickly in response to encouragement from President Trump. In an email on Monday, Tesla referred to an order on Thursday by California's governor, that's Gavin Newsom, allowing manufacturers to resume operations and said that as of Sunday, previously furloughed employees were back to their regular employment status. So this is great news. Here is a guy who is saying, I'm opening up my factory. If you don't want to come to work, you don't have to come to work. But one thing I know for sure is I'm not going to struggle to get new employees. And the same will happen in this country.
If you leave your job off that Tesla production line.
Well, I mean, it's mostly machines now, isn't it? But
I'm just curious to know.
But it's very exciting. I mean, I'm really interested in whether or not this is going to prove to separate the men from the boys, the wheat from the chaff. I think what we're going to see here is people who are in a hurry to get back to work and resume whatever occupation they had before, or a slightly different occupation than they had before, but employment nonetheless. These people are going to find themselves streaks ahead of the rest of the world. And good for Elon Musk for taking the risk. He says, like, you want to shut me down? Come and arrest me. Let's all do that.
I love Mavericks.
Do you think you'll start to see more leaders take this position, or do you think it's Elon just being Elon?
I think more people will.
No, you've seen it already. I mean, the UFC was back on the weekend. Dana White said, we are going ahead. They went ahead and put on a great show. It's their biggest card they've ever had. No fans.
Well, also, this is a great time for people to make a name for themselves by being brave, because history will record these names either for their foolishness, if it turns out that they've made a bad decision, or for their bravery. If you want to be an average person, wait for everyone else to do something. If you want to be better than average, do something ahead of everyone else.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I need to write that down on the back of a sugar sachet. If you want to be an average person, wait for someone.
Now wait for everyone else to do something.
Oh.
No one's going to remember your name if you're number 5,321. You're number one through five, people will remember your name.
That's a great point, Garrett. Sometimes it is better to be first than best. And I'm with Musk.
Almost always. So lots of interesting stuff going on in the US at the moment. And we've got to watch them because we'll see very quickly whether they're right or wrong. And of course, they're going to be critics and people are going to come out and say, this was precipitous and ill-advised. And that's the point with risk. Risk and reward go hand in hand. Nobody is rich in the world because they were risk averse.
And to be clear, I'll be a critic, but I love that Musk is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You need that fight back against idiots like me who want to strain you back. I love those rebels.
Right.
They drive us forward.
Right. Okay, so those are your headlines for this morning. Very exciting. We've got lots of stuff to talk about today. And we're going to also have, we mentioned the other day that Dis-Chem have been referred to the Competition Tribunal for prosecution. And that was in the media. And today we're going to find out what's going on there. And we got hold of somebody from their PR company who's going to explain to us what's actually happening. And we thought, even if they're also, obviously, they're being paid by Dis-Chem to show the best possible side of things. But we're going to give them a chance to explain the case because there was apparently an allegation of price gouging. And we will see whether or not that is what's happened. And we'll speak to someone from that side, give them a right of reply and see what's going on there. So it's important that because we're responsible people, we give people a chance to reply in their own voice. And then this is interesting. Pumi, do you remember Rorisang Tshabalala?
I was at his wedding before the lockdown.
There we go. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about this herd immunity. He, of course, was a co-host for Frankly Speaking, and he is now a strategist and former Cliff Central host who we'd like to check in with again. He says there's a lot of divergent opinion within the scientific and epidemiological community about whether herd immunity is a generally occurring phenomenon, and we'll find out from him what infections and what science he's able to glean for us this morning. So we're going to check in with Rorisang, which I'm excited about. Busy morning today. It's going to be very busy. We've got Blind History coming up a little bit later on. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. This morning, it is Eva Perón, the woman who has left her mark in Argentina forever. And there's no doubt that this woman has been immortalized by the musical Evita, but also by innumerable comments that have been made by politicians, female politicians, ever since in Argentina about the role that she played in making them stand for office, including the woman who was up to a short while ago, the president of Argentina. She was born poor, she was unimportant, ordinary, but she was very ambitious. And by the time she died at age 33, she had received the most ostentatious funeral probably in 20th century history, ever since Argentina has considered her a saint and other people in the world have considered her some kind of a monster. But you can make your own mind up. And then at 8 o'clock, I'm very happy to say we've got Reg Lascaris. And I've been promoting this on social media because if you're in marketing, advertising, or communications, and you don't listen to this interview with Reg Lascaris, you have only yourself to blame when the clients that you're supposedly serving fall to pieces. He's got interesting empirical research that they've been doing worldwide around companies that have been spending money, companies that haven't been spending money during COVID, and what the results of that have been for those companies in terms of bottom line earnings. So if you are in the marketing business or you're within a business where you're in charge of marketing, you need to listen to Reg at 8 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a fascinating thing about companies that are in marketing that are making a killing and not selling? Nike has been incredibly surprising. I don't know. I mean, I have this Nike app that I exercise with here in the yard and in the garage. And it's a free app, which they've been punting quite a lot. And on the app, it's got all sorts of different things for different people in the family and stuff. And I was intrigued at how much they're not selling anything on the app. So they're not selling, and I don't know if you know this, but Nike makes 25% of their profits of sneaker sales.
Okay.
Hmm.
this app has nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with apparel, sneakers, any of that. It's simple exercises.
But you know it works for them when everyone who just goes on, you know, a 100-meter jog posts on Instagram that whole graphic of this is where I ran.
Also, because of the fact that China largely has been shut down since about January, a lot of their factories have been shut down, right? But they posted in the last quarter an 11% jump in their headline share earnings, simply based on the kind of loyalty that they've been able to garner through all the free services that they're giving away and all of the marketing that they're doing there. And then their online sales, have surged because of chatting with people and giving people much more than they are trying to get from people. So Raymond Ackerman was right. Doing good is good business.
Well, you must hear what Reg has to say at 8. You'll love it.
I can't wait.
Yeah, and he starts off with a quote, which if you can figure out who he's talking about, I couldn't. I didn't know, and it was very interesting to hear who'd said it. But it's something that has stayed in my head since I spoke to him on Friday, and you get to hear it today, so don't miss that at 8 o'clock this morning. All right, lots to get to in the next hour. I'm excited. I hope you are. I hope you're ready for the day today. We've got lots of things that we want to talk about. You can join in, obviously, on the messages, 079-748-2090. Pums, just before we go to a song, there's somebody with a question for you here. Michelle wants to know, are you still doing yoga?
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
So do it. Also,
yoga. Doing it at home.
Yeah, still doing it at home. Still with my little heater to try and heat up the room.
It's both, you know, when you describe it to me, I have to be honest, it's both inspiring but also sad. I can put the heater in the room and try to make it as stuffy as possible.
Sure. They come with Pumi.
Yeah. It's very sad, but that's how the original Bikram did it, guys. It was like carpeted halls, it was heaters, before they became all sophisticated like that, and he became like a sexual predator.
Exactly, I was going to say, if anyone also has some downtime, best believe, go back and watch that Bikram documentary to see what the little guy in a black Speedo going around telling girls they should, you know, pose in yoga was doing.
I must say, I wasn't convinced about the yoga thing for a very long time. I found it a little bit like weird and pretentious. And, and now I love yoga, but I love the Bikram because it's only got like 26 moves and I know exactly what's coming next. I don't like it when like the person is saying stuff and I don't know what like upward facing dog, towel, whatever is. It's y'all, don't laugh, this is a thing. But the yoga, it's good for you.
The yogurt is also good for you. That's what I'm planning. That's what I'm planning for
in
breakfast.
Moderation.
Yogurt is what I'm planning for breakfast this morning, so very excited. All right, let's get your day off to a good start, shall we? We've got to do this together, everybody. cliffcentral.com. It is just before 7 o'clock, Tuesday morning, the 12th of May. CliffCentral.com